Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
And we're back. You're listening to 861B podcast of You, the Owner's Manual. This is the podcast that helps you take control of your health so you live at the top of your curve. And I have one of my old squash buddies back, but he's a great writer. Fascinating. I mean, I started this. He asked me to read this. I did it with trepidation, not really wanting to, but I couldn't put this book down. Literally, I think I read it in one reading to about 2 a.m. I started it at about 10:30 one night and couldn't put it down. It is a sensational book. Bob Mitchell is the author. The foreword was by Larry King. I never got to read that one. I'm glad. But Bob Mitchell is a great writer. That's the part you want to get to his article. It says, Time for Heart to Heart. That's the title. And I kept wanting to find out, Bob, what did you do wrong in your life that this happened to you? But before we get there...
First of all, I'm delighted to be here. Actually, I'm delighted to be anywhere, but... Talking to you, we went to college together about 50 years ago. But, that's a good segue to begin with, actually, to your specialty, which is, lifestyle, fitness, health, and all of that. What did I do to get there? In my case, in particular, it was not at all a question of lifestyle or diet or fitness or anything. I was always extremely fit. I played three sports in college. I taught tennis professionally. I was a semi-pro soccer player. I did everything right. My diet was always good. I just happened to have a very large genetic element thrown into the mix. My dad had an infarction and an MCI when he was 70. Unfortunately, my first one was when I was 41 in 1986. And genetics played just about, the whole role. Obviously, it had nothing to do with diet and fitness. And I learned many, many, many things through writing this book, Time for a Heart to Heart. One of them was, relating to your specialty, was that unfortunately, diet and fitness are fantastic to lower stress and to be good to your heart and all of that. This is something that everybody knows. But in my case, fitness and diet and lifestyle are not prophylactic. They cannot prevent heart attacks. Heart disease, if there is a large genetic makeup. And unfortunately, in my case, it was basically all genetic. So my dad had it, my grandfather had heart disease, and that's what happened to me at the age of 41.
So you were an active athlete, and
right.
You were, after your career in advertising, you then went to, and maybe I have this in wrong order, but you then went to be a teacher of, did you teach tennis at that time, or did you teach that before?
Actually, the chronology is after college, after Williams College, I got a PhD at Harvard, and I taught, I was a professor at Harvard and Ohio State University, taught French literature, and I did that for 12 years, and then for various reasons, I had to move back to New York and couldn't wait.
I'll bet you didn't eat very healthy when you were at Ohio State.
Well, I was teaching at Ohio State. At that point, I was in my, late 20s, early 30s. So I always had a pretty good diet, actually. After I left...
You can tell I'm tweaking Ohio State because Columbus has the worst food in the nation, from a rated as it isn't my ranking. This is the national media ranks it as having the food that's most likely to kill you.
Right. Well, that's true, but I ate pretty simply, and wasn't a question of diet. But at any rate, after I was a French professor, I went into advertising for 12 years, and then after that, I lived, in Paris and Tel Aviv and Sweden, all over the place, and. And then I started writing novels, first nonfiction books about sports, and then I wrote novels. I've been writing novels.
And
for
by the
15,
way, people
20,
should
yeah.
know these are really good nonfiction novels. They aren't. I went back after I was got excited by this book and went back to a couple of the sport analogy ones, I will say. You can tell us your favorite. But in any case, Bob is a really superb writer,
Thank you.
At least one other member of the squash team at Williams did not have that skill.
that's we all me. Have our specialties, you know.
And in fact, even though I've written four number one bestsellers and nine overall all bestsellers, the reason I did it was my English teacher at Williams wanted to write a number one bestsellers and was really nasty to me. And so I said, I'm going to beat him to a number one bestseller. And so that was my motivation, actually.
There you go.
But talk to me about you wrote this for what reason? What was the purpose in writing this other than you had to get, it's almost you have a compulsion to write, I've understood.
Yes, well, that's a great question. I wasn't intending to write it. I got out of the I was in the hospital for 100 days, four different hospitals, mostly at Cedars-Sinai in L.A., which was really lucky because they saved my life.
And by the way, this is not uncommon in waiting for heart transplants or in someone who's having a heart transplant, that period of time waiting for a heart, you actually got lucky to get it relatively early and not if you will, die while waiting. We have a real shortage of organs.
That's right. A lot of people die waiting. I was very lucky along the way. Number one, to be at Cedars-Sinai because they do people almost 70, 71, 72. I was extremely lucky. Also, my heart was in extremely bad shape, and my body was in great shape. So that combination put me on the 1A list. And in the waiting for the heart after 2 months, they found a renal cell carcinoma. I had cancer of the right kidney. They took me off the list. I was left to die. I was on dobutamine and milrinone and all kinds of whole cocktail of medications. And then they did a partial nephrectomy. They got half the kidney out, and it didn't spread. They put me back on the list, and I finally got a heart. It's a long story. But the question you asked was why I wrote this book. And when I was recuperating with my wife, Susan, who was an angel, she really saved my life, a big part of my getting better. I started working on my fifth novel, and she said, I should write about this book. And I said, no, I'm a novelist. I'm not going to write a memoir. Memoir is for convicted felons and famous people. And she said, no, you really should write it. And then I said, I'm a novelist. And then she said, well, you must write it. And I thought of an old quote from Rilke, the German poet, he's a book called Letters to a Young Poet. And he wrote the young poet, and he said, if you ask, must I write, and your answer is ich muss, meaning I must, then make it part of your life. And writing is a big part of my life. I have a passion for it. But I decided that I must write this book, this memoir about my heart, because it was such a life-changing event. And I was sure I could do it, and it took me about 6 months. And the reason I wrote it is it was very cathartic, obviously. But it put things into perspective, put my whole life into perspective, and it gave it meaning. And I spent 100 days virtually thinking about this and pondering all of the basic conflicts of life that I've been teaching and living and reading about and writing about for over 50 years. And it was so healthy to do this because it's not easy waiting for a heart for 100 days, but thinking, Susan saved my life, but music saved my life. Cedars-Sinai saved my life, great surgery, and then anesthesiology saved my life. I know that's your specialty. And but also thinking saved it because it got me from not being negative. It got me to be really positive. And I was hoping, I'm still hoping that the book, which was out last week, will help a lot of people, think about all these major issues, not only heart patients, but just people, because these are a big part of our lives.
More of the You, the Owner's Manual podcast with Dr. Mike Roizen coming up. But first, I want to tell you about Organifi. Organifi is an organic superfood supplement line that makes quality, trusted nutrition convenient and accessible. We all know green juice is good for us, but have any of you tried juicing? Not only does it cost a fortune, especially if you're shopping organic, but it is also very time-consuming. And that's why I opt for Organifi Green Juice, an organic superfood green juice powder that you just add to water and get your greens on the go. It helps me sustain energy all throughout the day. It's quick and easy nutrition on the go. And it's not just any green juice. Remember, it's organic, and I want you to try it out, all right? Go to Organifi.com, and we're going to save you 20% off by using the code YOU, that's Y-O-U, at checkout. Once again, try out Organifi Green Juice for 20% off using code YOU, Y-O-U, at checkout at Organifi.com. That's Organifi.com. Now back to Dr. Michael Roizen and the You, the Owner's Manual podcast.
Now you go through, you're in this, you really go through a lot of the dilemmas, a lot of the suffering, a lot of the empathy with both patients and physicians. And what happens, and if you will, do-overs are indeed permitted here. Talk to me about this and what you want to make of your life now, and how is it different? By the way, this has a striking cover. It's a black cover that I found out from Bob where he got it, but you're going to have to look at the book to see the striking cover of what looks like a surgeon with a heart in his hand in a way that none of us would have a heart in our hands now, but it's so very interesting. Bob, what if you had to say... what are these lessons in life that you would pass on? Talk to us about it.
Oh, well, you asked actually two questions. One was the physician-patient relationship, and now the lessons in life. And they're actually both melded together, so I can answer this fairly easily. The lessons I talk about and the conflicts I talk about have to do with, you know, success and failure and constriction and freedom, life and death, obviously, control and surrender, arbitrariness and justice, on and on. And as far as the physicians are concerned, I write a lot about the physician-patient relationship, which is so important, and the need to ask questions and to learn from physicians and to teach them in a funny way, have that, you know, that relationship with them. I had a long talk with my surgeon, a man named Alfredo Trento, and I speak Italian, so it was all in Italian. And I said, you know, I'm going to go in just before my surgery, 12-hour heart and kidney transplant surgery. And I said, you know, I'm putting on my left brain surgeon's hat, I told him. I said, I go in, my heart is of a certain condition. There are certain scientific laws that play here. The anesthesiologist has certain technique and knowledge, and so does my surgeon. So isn't it just sort of whatever's going to happen, happens? I said, what is the role of the positive attitude? And he said, oh, my God, he's done a lot of research on it, and something about the neurobiological or the neurobiochemical effect of hopefulness and strength. And he knew that I had, you know, very strong motivation to survive and a great drive that I got from my athletic competitive background, but also, you know, my love of my wife and of my writing and of my kids and of my friends. And I had a lot of motivation to live, so that played a huge part. And also, as far as physicians are concerned, I may have told you, but a couple of months ago, I reached out to the major hospital centers / medical schools around the country. And I thought it would be interesting to give grand rounds lectures there to talk about the physician-patient, very important physician-patient relationship. In medicine, they call it narrative medicine. But at any rate, about that and about all the what I call the seven powers that a patient can have, but a doctor has to sometimes bring it out of that patient. And anyway, it has to do with hope and knowing and not knowing and so on.
And I should tell people it is in the book, and yes, these are in the book by
exactly.
Bob Mitchell. We're talking to Bob Mitchell, and I say this probably under appreciating it. He is a fabulous writer. The book is Time for Heart to Heart.
It's available on Amazon, of course.
Yeah, well, go ahead, Bob. Don't. No. I take care of the publicity for you.
Okay.
You just talk about the book.
I'm a writer, and I'm not a natural marketer, but I thought it. But finally, just to finish up, most of these medical schools didn't allow non-MD people to give grand rounds lectures because you had to talk about recent research. But three of them so far have been really sort of open-minded, and so I'm giving grand rounds lectures next week at Mount Sinai Hospital in New York and Columbia University Physicians and Surgeons in New York and Georgetown in D.C. And hopefully I can share, you know, all of my what I've learned about pride and humility and all of these lessons and these powers that a patient has. So anyway, I just wanted to finish that thought.
And what have you done? Now you're obviously busy, and it's got to be a stress on you to do the promotion for a book. And what have you done to help yourself handle that? And what do you do with the rest of your life? Where are you in rehabilitating yourself?
Oh, this is a great question. You know, to be honest, after a heart and kidney transplant and after being on life support for 100 days, that was 2 years ago, I don't think of life as stressful at all. I mean, we all have stresses, obviously, but I don't find it stressful, and I try to make everything a challenge and a joy instead of being stressed out about, you know, marketing and selling this book, whatever. Whatever will be, will be. I use one metaphor in the book that's really helpful to me and maybe to other people, too. It's from an Italian song by a wonderful singer named Francesco De Gregori, and the song is about a soccer player named Nino, and there's a line that says, "Ma Nino non aver paura di sbagliare un calcio di rigore," which means, but Nino is not afraid of missing a penalty kick. You asked about stress. To me, everybody has two choices in life about heart disease or anything, and it's fear or hope. And I choose to have hope and not fear. That gets rid of a lot of stress in life. And this song about Nino, I've taken a lot of penalty kicks when I was a soccer player. And you do have two choices. You can be afraid in life or in a soccer penalty kick. You know, am I going to miss it? Am I going to let down the coach? Am I going to let down my teammates? I'm going to fail. You can think about that, or you can have the attitude that's more positive and, you know, courageous, if you will. I'm going to make this kick. I know I'm going to make it. I have confidence in myself. I practiced. And I am prepared. And so to answer your question, I really don't think of marketing or anything anymore for the rest of my life in terms of stress. That's not my mindset. I think attitude is so important and positivity. And, you know, that's the choice I make. And hopefully, you know, most people do. I know it's not true all the time.
And that's very similar to what Isaiah Thomas said. Isaiah Thomas, the basketball player, on shooting the foul shots that won the NCAA championship, was said, how stressed. He said, are you kidding me? Playing basketball, even shooting foul shots at the end of the game, that's not stress compared to living in the ghetto and being worried about whether you're going to survive. And I guess you had this same near-death experience, if you will, meaning every you were worried for that 100 days as well. But now that you're out, are you doing positive things for your exercise? Have you changed your eating habits? What are you doing with meditation? How are you managing your exposure to toxins? Talk to me about the routine things in the last minute.
Sure, sure.
And I should tell people, again, we're talking to what I consider a great author. This book is fascinating. I should have known that he was a writer, a superb writer. Time for Heart to Heart. The book author is Bob Mitchell. A superb, superb book. Go ahead, Bob. Talk to me about your other things in life.
I deeply appreciate that. My routine is very, very good. I have a very positive attitude. I haven't changed my eating habits. I eat very well, basically. I fairly low cholesterol, low salt, and all of that. I'm on when I came out of the hospital, I was on about 42 medications, including prednisone. I couldn't, my hands were shaking. I couldn't write, God forbid. But now I'm only on about 21 a day, and the two most important are my immunosuppressants, which are, oh my God, I can't believe I forgot the name of it. Everlimus and Tacrolimus, you know, they prevent my body from attacking my foreign body,
kidney.
Which is my
right.
my new heart and kidney. So that's my medication. I also take Crestor for my heart. But my heart is 31 years old now, and even though some of my arterial system is old, obviously, I'm in very, very good shape. I go to the gym 3 or 4 times a week. I do about a half an hour a day on ellipticals, standing and sitting ellipticals, and a little weight. And I walk the other days. I don't go to the gym. Except for the medications, I watch out. You know, my diet is a little constricted. I'm sad to say that I can't eat sushi anymore or fried eggs or medium rare steak or any kind of meat that's medium rare because of the worry of bacteria. But, you know, man is a great man, women are great, great at making up for things that don't work anymore. So I'm getting along fine without those things. I was reminded when I had a quadruple bypass in 1986, my first surgery, that the body is just an amazing thing. I'm preaching to the choir, of course. You know this so well, Mike. But I did not have a mammary artery bypass because it was an emergency. So I had my saphenous vein all up and down my leg from my groin to my ankle. And they cut that into 4 parts and bypassed it. And they told me when I got out, I don't have much of a left brain, but I could follow this. They told me that each one of these vein parts had to learn immediately how to act as an artery. And I was stunned by that. I was just like, my mouth was open. I couldn't believe it. And the body does that. They, you know, tissues learn to act differently when they have to. And, it's pretty amazing.
Well, hopefully you'll learn to have fun and act a little differently when you read this, a wonderful book, Time for Heart to Heart. We've been talking in this episode of the podcast, 861B, to Bob Mitchell, the author of Time for Heart to Heart and many other novels. Your favorite novel, Bob, of your own, which of yours is your favorite other than Time for Heart to Heart?
Are you talking about a parent and his children? It just depends on what they're all different. A novel, baseball novel I wrote called Once Upon a Fastball.
Yeah. And remember, I'm in Cleveland. We're having a great season. Hopefully it'll continue. And thanks,
yes, 20
Bob
in
Mitchell.
A row. That's
and
amazing.
Time for a heart to heart. We'll be back
so much,
next
Mike.
Week with 862 and both the news of the week and what you should do about it. And, of course, another great guest. Thanks again, Randall, for great engineering. And you for downloading us. Please do rate us as well. But keep downloading us. It makes all of us keep working harder so we can give you the information so you can take control of your health. Thanks again. And see you next week.